We've had several polymaths on this show, from Jon Favreau to Matt Ross and Warren Beatty, who are as at home in front of the camera as behind it. And Stanley Tucci certainly falls into that category. An actor, writer and director who's been involved with countless critically acclaimed works of film and television. Among those we'll discuss are sleeper hit Big Night and box office smash Beauty and the Beast. Stanley's latest project is Final Portrait, starring the sensational Jeffrey Rush and Armie Hammer. It's based on the true story of the time American journalist James Lord sat for world-renowned artist Alberto Giacometti. Critics and we agree, it's a charming delight. I'm Edith Bowman and you're listening to Soundtracking, a weekly podcast dedicated to the sounds of the screen. Now, given the 1960s Parisian setting, there were plenty of opportunities to play around with the idiomatic French music of the era, but Stanley was keen to avoid clichés, complementing the familiar sounds of accordions and chanteuses with Evan Laurie's whimsical score. As I mentioned, the premise of the film is a simple one, neatly encapsulated by Lord's opening line of dialogue.
In 1964, I was a young writer living in Paris. I'd written a few articles about Alberto Giacometti, who was one of the most accomplished and respected artists of his generation. I'd become good friends with Giacometti and his brother Diego, and one day after an exhibition, he asked me to sit for a portrait. He told me it would take no longer than 2 to 3 hours, an afternoon at the most.
Stanley Tucci, welcome to Soundtracking. We're going to talk about music,
okay,
if that's all right.
Yeah.
Can we start with Final Portrait? Because What's wonderful about this film is being able to delve into the music of that time in that particular place. Was that fun to decide on?
You know, we just tried to find a few things from the period that were really classic examples of that period, like almost shameless examples of that period, because I wanted to set the stage in the sense that Lord says to his lover back in New York, he says, oh yeah, Giacometti's going to paint my portrait. He said it's going to take, you know, an afternoon or something. And so then we have this very kind of quintessential, almost cheesy Parisian accordion music from the 1950s, 60s that takes us into Giacometti's studio. Then the music is abruptly, the rug is pulled out from under your oral feet.
Yeah. Yeah.
And from then on, for the most part, it's score. And it's Evan Lurie who wrote the score. He's a brilliant, brilliant composer. And it is distinctly different from this, because we think we're getting 1960s Paris, and then we're just not getting that. We're in this sort of sepulcher of creation. then periodically when they step outside, you'll hear this quintessential Parisian stuff. Après le bas plus l'eau, pour que ça reste chaud, je sais ce qu'il nous faut, c'est du jazz à gogo. Tous ceux qui l'aiment bien, et moi qui l'aime bien, on va chanter ensemble, pourvu que ça balance. So that was fun to play with, to juxtapose those two things.
And deliberate, I imagine, in terms of that, because when you're in his world, it's kind of stark.
Yeah, and I like to use music judiciously in a film. I don't like to use a lot of it, but sometimes it's really necessary. And obviously, you have a great composer like Evan, it's very helpful.
Who you've worked with before?
Yes.
When you're writing and directing a project, at what point do you start conversations with your composer?
Usually in the editing process. Sometimes I can hear the music pretty clearly, what I want. And I'll use a lot of source music, too. But also, source music can be very expensive, too. So we had to be very careful. We didn't have a lot of money. So the source music that we used was very inexpensive for this movie. OK pour la guitare, OK pour la batterie, et pour la contrebasse, et le piano aussi. Tous ceux qui l'aiment bien, et moi qui l'aime bien. On va danser ensemble pourvu que ça balance. Et dans tous les pays, de New York à Paris, parlons la même langue, le jazz mène la danse. We also used a piece from a band called Paris Combo that I started listening to many years ago, and I just think they're incredible. We were able to buy this one song and use it during a montage. That's a mix of sort of contemporary and classic French dancehall music.
Yeah.
And that part of the process comes usually during the editing. Si ce n'est pas le vent du changement qui vient souffler de l'air à mes ailes, ce n'est pas un courant d'air que j'attends pour m'envoler jusqu'au ciel. J'ai besoin d'un petit vent bien pressant pour me donner de l'altitude et savourer tout en planant cette idée de plénitude. Sans un cœur qui bat, si ce n'est pas le vent du plaisir qui vient combattre mon apesanteur, je ne serai pas sans mauvais effet, me pousser droit vers un leurre. Car si l'amour n'est pas dans l'air, je préfère rester sur terre. Mais si l'amour n'est pas sur terre, je préfère reprendre l'air. Mais si l'amour n'est pas dans l'air, je préfère rester sur terre. Mais si l'amour n'est pas sur terre, je préfère reprendre l'air. And with this movie, I had great difficulty figuring out, when I wasn't using source music, what the music was going to be. And luckily I went to Evan and he started sending stuff and it ended up being wonderful. Most of it was done via Skype or FaceTime because he was in the US and he would just send me pieces on my iPad and then I would listen to them and then we'd have a session over FaceTime or something, you know. And neither of us are very sort of good with technology, so it took a while.
I know that this book was with you in your 20s that introduced you to this whole event that unfolds in the film, but through your research, did you come across Giacometti reference music at all or know what was around him?
Yeah, it's interesting you asked that. I looked for that and I never found any. He never spoke about music. I don't think music was really a part of his life.
Yeah.
I know that I was lucky enough to go into the warehouse where his stuff is stored that the Giacometti Foundation has. And it's, I can't tell you, what it was incredible to see these rooms filled with his stuff that no one may ever see.
What? Get it out there. Why is it not on show?
I don't know. I don't quite know. I'm not quite sure. And the only thing I saw in there was an old radio from the 60s that obviously had been in either his bedroom or his apartment. Because a lot of his stuff was in there. You know, there were no records. There was no record player. There's nothing that talks about him going to concerts or going to anything like that. I think he was completely disinterested. So it was hard. I think that might have been one of the reasons that, you know, I couldn't figure out what it was supposed to be.
Yeah.
And you don't want to make it cliched using music of that period. That's just way too easy.
Yeah.
I mean, I used it as a sort of joke in a way.
Yeah.
When I use it. But other than that, so it has to be its own individual thing, which is what Evan
created. Yeah. How did that relationship start?
I met him through my friend Steve Buscemi, who had used him on a number of movies.
Yeah.
And Evan ended up doing a movie I did called Joe Gould's Secret. And I'm just a huge admirer of his. I think he's an extraordinary musician.
When I watched The Big Night, Gary Dim Michelle did the music for that. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
You hear music before you see anything.
It's a Roman Stornello, I think. It's
wonderful.
At the beginning, yeah.
È scritto nel tuo cuore. Se l'esistenza m'avveleno, anche se l'esistenza m'avveleno. Voglio restare sempre a te vicino.
From doing this, I pay much more attention to music now than I ever did, and I love that I do that. But from watching the film again, you can't quite place that piece of music. It encompasses quite a lot of different cultures and traditional music within it, which I think is wonderful.
Yeah.
For the film as well.
Good.
What were the conversations with regards to The Big Night and music as well? Because There's not loads of music in it. Again, there's these little pockets of of colour.
Well,
and
we used a fair amount of source music. Obviously, we were able to use some of Louis Prima stuff. Now, this is 21 years ago, and because it was an independent film, you could get things inexpensively. We could never afford that stuff today.
Buonasera, signorina, buonasera. It is time to say goodnight to Napoli. Though it's hard for us to whisper, buonasera, with that old moon above the Mediterranean Sea. In the morning, signorina, we'll go walking where the mountains help the sun come into sight. And by the little jewelry shop, we'll stop and linger while I buy a wedding ring for your finger.
In the meantime, let me tell you that I love you.
Buonasera, signorina, kiss me goodnight. Buonasera, signorina, kiss me goodnight. Buonasera, signorina, kiss me goodnight.
And then those ancient stornelli, and then there's one in there that's like a 13th century beggar song or something that we use. That's a guy talking about fish, but actually it's over a montage of people making pasta. But no one knows that until now.
Ma sento allegro stamattina, ieri c'era la rete mera, tanta pesci e peschetta, e ma sento te criete. Uè, lo pesce calamere treia, le peschette stamattina. Io venno a buon mercato e perché gli ne sposiamo corrite femmina del paese aiutate la bancarella mettete la villa dentro la funnella dietro la frida dentro la padella uè, lo pesce calamere treglia le peschette stamattina lo venimmo a buon mercato e perché gli ne sposiamo corrite femmina del paese, aiutate la bancarella, mettete la villa dentro la funnella, dietro la frida dentro la padella. Uè, lo pesce!
There's a classic theme that runs through this, and it's ancient. It's that through the Italian music, which is that that. So that's in the Stornelli. That's even in some of the early stuff, and it takes us all the way through to Louis Prima. When you listen to Louis Prima, it's every song, you know. After a while, you're like, really? Couldn't you come up with something else? But that strain, that was really important for us to try to take that strain and bring it all the way through.
Oh Marie,
oh Marie,
oh Marie,
oh Marie,
in your arms, I'm longing to be,
longing to be,
baby,
baby,
tell me you love me,
tell me you love me,
kiss me once while the stars shine above me,
shine above me,
hey, hey Marie,
hey Marie,
oh Marie,
oh Marie,
in your arms I'm longing to be,
longing to be,
oh baby,
oh baby.
Tell me you love me.
Tell me you love me.
Hey, Marie.
Hey, Marie.
Hey, Sammy. Come here, boy. Where, Marie? Where, Marie? Where, Marie? Cuando's on her? She bears her birthday. Farmer to me. Farmer to me. Uno noto, uno noto. Uno noto, uno noto, bracciata. Uno noto, bracciata, bracciata. Uno noto, uno noto, bracciata. Come on, boy. What's the matter? Uno noto, bracciata. Cuando's on her? She pays every day. Ha 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 ha. Mama to me. Way money, way money. Way money, way money, way money.
Do you listen to music when you're writing?
Yeah, mostly jazz. I love jazz. Some classical.
Do you think about what you're going to listen to before you write? You know, not in terms of making a playlist for what you're writing about or whatever
yeah.
But do you make you conscious?
Yeah, yeah. It depends on the mood I'm in. Sometimes I want something a little. Yeah. I had enough of that.
Do you remember what the films were that had a lasting impression on you, where you recognised the music?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think...
Not recognise the music, but yeah. you recognise the importance and the place that music had within the film.
Yes, yes. Well, Jaws. How did you not think about that? Yeah. It's probably one of the greatest Lovely scores ever. Ever. The Marx Brothers movies, the way they used music, like I think Groucho's songs, but also the way they integrated music into the films is really funny and weird.
We've spoken a couple of times over the last couple of days, and the Marx Brothers have been a constant reference point.
Yeah, I love the Marx Brothers.
That's the dream.
Yeah, Marx Brothers, Buster Keaton, yeah, you can't, yeah. Yeah.
I kind of like the simplicity of those times as well, in terms of the comedy was just so wonderful and yeah. simple and didn't rely on much apart from great performances.
Yeah, exactly, great performances. And they were vaudevillians. I mean, it was, you know, you turned the camera on and then they did their thing and then you turned it off, you know. That's pretty good. But I think also there was a lot of social commentary and political commentary in there, which, if we look back on it now, is really important.
Ah, this meeting brings back memories. Childhood days, lemonade, romance. My life was wrapped around a circus. Her name was Lydia. I met her at the World's Fair in 1900, marked down from 1940. Ah, Lydia. She was the most glorious creature under the sun. Thais, Dubarry, Gabo, rolled into one. Oh,
Lydia, oh, Lydia, say, have you met Lydia? Lydia, the tattooed lady. She has eyes that folks adore so, and a torso even more so. Lydia, oh Lydia, that encyclopedia. Oh Lydia, the queen of tattoo. On her back is the Battle of Waterloo. Beside it, the wreck of the Hesperus too. And proudly above waves the red, white, and blue. You can learn a lot from Lydia. I said Lydia.
He said Lydia.
They said Lydia.
We said Lydia. La, la.
We had Bill Condon on the show.
Oh, my God.
What a lovely man.
No, he's the nicest man.
And congratulations on the enormous worldwide success of Beauty and the Beast.
Thank you.
I mean, I imagine for, you know, when the discussions were first happening, there is a risk element there in terms of recreating something very different to the original that was so loved. But to do what he did with it and what you guys did with it as a cast was just exceptional.
Yeah, he's pretty extraordinary. I mean, he can kind of do anything. He can kind of direct anything.
He kind of does,
yeah,
doesn't he?
Yeah, it's very impressive.
I love the surprises that he throws your way of kind of what he does next.
I know, I know.
What are your memories of that?
Just the best week of my life. You know, it was just a week. It was just
a week.
Yeah, it was just a week. You know, I did a day of recording.
Yeah.
And then we were on set for a week, just shooting those little bits. Because we're really just live action at the beginning and at the end. And then the rest is just me doing a few lines and they animated the thing. So, for me, it was nothing. I mean, Emma and Dan were there for months. You know? Yeah. But it was really fun because I got to see Ewan McGregor again, whom I love, and got to get to know Emma Thompson. And it was Sir Ian. It was just great fun.
That's like a Audra. Dream dinner party.
Oh my God, we laughed so hard. I have to say, I couldn't wait to go to work every day.
I actually spoke to Ewan about it at the Edinburgh Festival, Film Festival, a couple of years ago. We did a big Q&A, and he told this wonderful story about when he went into the sound booth to do his stuff, and there was, maybe 20 people through the glass just watching him.
Terrifying.
And they wanted him to do French, but it was quite a specific French. He's like, I live French, my wife's French, but as soon as he started talking, he sounded Mexican, and so he was just kind of like terrified, and he could feel the kind of pain in these people's eyes of looking at him going, we'll be back with you in a second, and going, what is he doing? It's really terrifying. And he says it's actually quite healthy to be in that position where you are scared and you are kind of going, oh my God, am I going to get this right?
Yeah. And then he had to sing with a French accent. Yeah. That's even scarier.
Maestro Cadenza, are you ready?
Oh, another cavity.
Maestro, your wife is upstairs, finding it harder and harder to stay awake. She's counting on you to help us break this curse. Pleasure that we welcome you tonight. And now, we invite you to relax. Let us pull up a chair. Your dinner.
What was your response when you sat down and watched the film for the first time?
I loved it. I couldn't believe the scope of it. It was pretty profound. But also when I walked onto the set, we walked onto the ballroom set. That was my first day. I could not believe what I was seeing. And I've made like way too many movies. And I was so impressed. I felt like a kid again when I saw the beauty of that set and the magnificence of it. It was really astounding. I felt like I'd never been on a movie set before.
And they couldn't have done the music without Alan. It had to be Alan.
Oh, yeah. Brilliant.
An instrument?
I was a drummer, yeah.
Were you? Mm. I would not have had you down as a drummer. I don't know why.
Really?
Jazz drumming? I don't know.
I started taking lessons when I was probably about 10. And the guy who taught me was a guy named Walter Peikarts. But I was taught military drumming. So what I was taught with was just a pad and solid stainless steel sticks. They were quite heavy. So once you work with those, then you move on to a sort of regular drumstick. Your hands are twice as fast. So I was quite good at obviously all my rudiments and all that stuff, and I could read sort of complex military marches and stuff like that. And then we moved to the kit. And I played through high school. And then after that, I really sort of didn't play anymore after that.
You've got to
play. I played at my wedding.
Did you?
Yes, my late wife, I played, yes.
You've got to play drums on one of your movies. Not maybe in the movie, but maybe on the score.
No, that would be painful. It would be terrible for everyone. I reached a certain point, a certain level, and then I kind of didn't go any farther. So I have to take lessons for it again.
Stanley, thank you so much for your time. I really look forward to watching Feud, but also seeing what you bring to us directing-wise next as well. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
A girl went back to Napoli because she missed the scenery, the native dances and the charming songs. But wait a minute, something's wrong. Hey, mambo, mambo Italiano. Hey, mambo, mambo.
mixed up Siciliano. All you Calabrese do the mambo like a crazy with a hey mambo. Don't want a tarantella, hey mambo. No more the mozzarella, hey mambo. Mambo Italiano, try an enchilada with the fish baccalà. And then hey gumba, I love how you dance a rumba. But take some of advice, paisano, learn how to mambo. If you're gonna be a square, you ain't gonna wear a hey mambo. Mambo Italiano, hey mambo. Mambo Italiano, oh, oh, oh. You mixed up Siciliana, it's so delicious. Everybody come capisce how to mambo Italiano. Nice.
From the soundtrack to Big Night, that's Mambo Italiano by Rosemary Clooney, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with the fabulous Stanley Tucci. My huge thanks to Stanley for joining us. Final Portrait is on general release around the world now and is a real understated gem. You can find the full track list for this show by heading to edithbowman.com, where you can also subscribe to this podcast and catch up with all of our previous episodes. Please follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. We are at Soundtracking UK, and please do spread the word amongst your mates if you like what you hear. Next up then is a gentleman who's part of one of the biggest bands in the world but has just accepted the challenge of his first film score. We're joined by Radiohead's Philip Selway. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.